All right, good evening. This is Tuesday, January. No, wait, hold on. It's February something or other. February 3rd? Where am I? This is the refinery. Yeah, it's late because I was lost, and I still am. The place where grassroots organizations come together to explore the best ways to make conservative messaging work to reach and influence more people. We're live every Tuesday at 8:45 ish central. Go to therefinerieshow.com. That's where you can watch us live and chat live with us. You can also go anytime to watch, listen, and subscribe to the show via YouTube, Vigilant Liberty Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Also, plenty of options for you to provide us feedback. We definitely want to hear from you. What topics would you like us to cover in the future? What did you think about this episode? We like feedback. We live online and elsewhere, theoretically, but we're mostly just in our computers. I'm Leslie P. I'm with the Conservative Union, and with us tonight we also have JD and Felicia with Free Radical Network. We'll be joined later, apparently, by Corey and Eddie Paith with the Party of Choice, and anybody else with the Conservative Union or Free Radical Network that gets the link and accidentally clicks on it and joins the hangout.
Falls in our trap. Yes, no,
Falls in our trap.
the Party of Choice are famous now. They're doing solo radio shots on actual terrestrial radio, so they're too big for us right now. They come in when they want is what's
Yeah.
happening.
Whenever they deign to grace us with their presence, we have to be all honored and stuff. I don't know. And yes, it's Pate, not Paith. And
We've only been doing this show for a
it's
year.
spelled Peth, Peth, and I have to remember to pronounce it Pate. Come on, man, I'm a Texan. I can hardly even read. What the heck? And according
Oh,
to Alcee Hastings, I'm crazy.
I was gonna say, do you have to be down on Texas anymore? Look at, we've already got Florida complete with Florida man.
Florida man says Texas is crazy. The
Yes.
noive. The noive of that guy. I was gonna say something else, but I guess we're trying to be G-rated or
Wait,
something.
wait. What if Alcee Hastings is Florida man?
Oh my God, he could be.
That would be amazing.
Florida man gets elected to Congress and goes really crazy. Alcee Hastings is Florida man. I anticipate tomorrow that the entire Texas contingent in Washington is gonna like stand on the steps and I don't know, sing the state song, sing Texas our
Oh, okay.
Texas or something.
I'm sorry, please. Before we go into this even more, I'm not from Texas, therefore I'm not Texas-centric, even though I know more Texas politicians than I really should.
You know more about
Like,
Texas politics than I do.
I freaking know who your comptroller is. I don't know who the comptroller is in New Jersey. So I'm not informed about this story. I saw it briefly, but there are people in the chat room that
Oh,
are
do I need
scratching
to
their heads right now
going
and saying,
what?
"What is going
Okay.
on here, you Texans?"
Okay, I will give us a brief summary. Apparently, this afternoon there was a meeting in a House Rules Committee or one of the other committees. They were discussing voting on the repeal of Obamacare, and the position of the Democrats on that is that we're wasting everybody's time and we're stupid doo-doo heads or whatever. But Alcee Hastings, who is a congressman from Florida, he was responding to Michael Burgess, I believe, who's one of our congressmen from Texas. And he actually said something about the state of Texas being crazy. You're from that crazy state. And then he specified, and I said that and I meant it. And then there was a little bit of pushback from the Texas guys saying, did you really mean to call this state, the citizens of this state, crazy? And he doubled down and absolutely said, yes, I don't mean to call you, Mr. Congressman, my colleague, I'm not calling you crazy. I'm calling the state crazy. I mean, he even clarified that he thinks his colleague is perfectly fine because, you know, politicians are good people, but that the citizens of Texas were crazy cakes. And somebody asked him when he was going to apologize, and he said he would apologize when hell freezes over. And there was some rather, I thought it was pretty funny, you know, Texas congressman clutching at their pearls, you know, how dare you insult us? I am offended. It was actually kind of funny, but you know, I don't expect that the Texas congressional delegation is going to let it slide. They're going to carry it for all it's worth because publicity and because fun.
Right. And when you have a congressman such as Alcee Hastings
calling us,
there's a certain amount of humor in that. And, you know, it does kind of beg, what's the best response when the left gets nasty? Do you get nasty and belligerent back? Do you step back and do, as you said, clutch your pearls and feign offense and the fit of the vapors? Or, you know, what do you do there? I think it's really interesting to see how this is going to play out, because you want to put the left on the wrong foot. When they do something like that, you want to keep them on the wrong foot. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with this.
I think it is going to be funny. At least I hope it is, because nobody's genuinely offended, because, I mean, who cares what Florida man says?
How Texan. You know what's really crazy, though? And to sort of move on from the craziness that is Florida and Texas, the thing that we, the first story that got put into the queue this week.
And wait a minute. Did you just call Texas crazy?
I think you just were hearing things.
I don't have my pearls on. But them spotlights, son.
Okay.
That's what you get for calling us crazy.
I'm sorry. It was a misstep. I misspoke. That's what it is. The story that we did actually want to get to first here is the story of, Seattle. Come on, guys. It's troubling to me because Seattle, and I feel for Seattle. I don't feel for Seattle, no. I feel for Washington State, because I live in New Jersey. I know how conservative New Jersey can be outside of its population centers and the liberal areas. I mean, that's basically what it is. Washington is a conservative state outside of Seattle and its surrounding suburbs. That's it. I mean, it's amazing just the situation there demographically, how one population center can hold hostage the entire state. But coming out of the Washington Times by Fingers Malloy of, you know, everywhere, he talks about a new ordinance that's going to be put into place that makes it illegal to throw away food in the trash. You can't throw food away in the trash. It has to be composted or put into a separate container.
Kids are supposed to report on their parents, and you know, you're supposed to report on your neighbors and stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's amazing that this is something that has been allowed to happen. Who even thinks about how on earth are they going to enforce this? And what is going on?
Can we say, though, that part of the problem, part of the fault for this lies with those of us who don't kind of watchdog our local governments? And this originally, I heard this whole story from Fingers on Tony Katz's show in the morning on WIBC. And, you know, he was talking about all the other things that California bans and whatnot, and then now Seattle's getting into the act. It's this sort of thing that you can't quite get away from in these cities, especially that are liberal enclaves, but it's spreading. It's not something that's isolating itself to the city. Bag bans, plastic bag bans all over the place, things like that. You find
don't actually do any good. They're bad and harmful, but it makes people feel good about themselves. So
it does. But you have these governments, these entities that people aren't looking at because they're so busy looking at the national picture and getting upset about that. But the lever to move a city council or a mayor's race or something like that on a smaller scale is so much smaller that you need. And so many people won't look at those things because the national politics are so much sexier. Presidential year politics are so much sexier. It's very discouraging, and I'm encouraged to hear that there are at least somebody's looking at these things, somebody's watching them. But I think we all need to commit this year, especially. This is a lot of municipal elections this year for a lot of places. We need to commit to get a little bit more involved on the local scene, not necessarily taking our eyes off the national scene, but recognizing that this is the sort of stuff that slips in while we're looking at what the guys are doing in Washington.
Well, and it also can be part of, if you don't like electoral politics, if you don't like dealing with politicians and political parties, pick a cause instead. Because some of this stuff happens because the groups that decide they are the cause of Mothers Against Plastic Bags or whatever they are, they come together as a cause. And then they make it happen because everybody else is focusing on national politics. So maybe you don't care about your mayor or your city council person, but maybe you care about some other local cause that you can get involved in, making your child's lunches healthy and nutritious and, I don't know, edible. Or, you know, finding a way to provide meals for people before and after school that aren't part of taxpayer-funded education funds that are done by, you know, charitable groups in the city. Maybe there's something you can get involved in that allows for restaurants to donate their leftover food at the end of the day to homeless and hungry people. Maybe you can get involved in a cause like that that's going to really change the face of your city, and that can be your conservative political activism. And it still has nothing to do with elected officials or the Republican Party or any of that stuff.
No, absolutely not. And it's one of those things where you can find tons of these causes and have a huge impact in your area just by championing them. And think about it, a lot of these things, like say the homeless feeding ordinances in Florida and in Texas. I mean, I don't want to get Fishy started on this because she gets nuts over this. But mm-hmm. I mean, these things are extremely detrimental to people. It's very harmful, and it hurts actual people. It's amazing the stuff that the state is preventing you from doing to help other people.
And we've talked about the motivation for that time and again. It's all taking place around people and among people, those kind of legislation, those discussions taking place among people who do not pay the costs socially, financially, whatever, for the thing that they're against.
Right. Whatever. And it doesn't hurt me if I spend another 1% of my livelihood on food because I make so much money that another 1% is no big deal. But it really impacts the poor people. But I don't care about them. So it's more, I think people should use paper bags instead of plastic. So because I'm not effective at persuading the public, because I'm no good at convincing them because it's really wrong, since should isn't effective, I'm going to go for the law and make it a must. And there's a big difference, and that I think is a big difference between conservatives and liberals. We tend to go for the shoulds. We will preach to you. We will try to sell you on our ideas. We will try to convince you of the type of life you should lead, and we will trust you to make your own decisions because we want you to be in control of your own life, and we want you to be able to make. We want you to be able to own the morality of your choices, because it's really only a moral victory if you've chosen it yourself. Whereas the left, they don't necessarily care so much about moral victories. They just want to control you, and they bypass should and go for must. And we end up losing the difference a lot.
Well, and we talk time and again that compulsion does not equal conviction. And yet, that is sort of the staple of the left, that compulsory doing things their way, they think that hearts and minds will follow, I guess. Is that what they operate under?
I don't know. It just seems like they don't care. It seems like they just don't care.
As long as everybody is forced to, that's all that matters. And it's it really is highlighted in some of the vaccine discussion that most of us have heard the craziness of this week, the difference between should and must. Almost every single, well, okay, every person that has ever thought about the vaccine issue really thinks you should vaccinate your children so that they shouldn't get these diseases and you shouldn't let your child be a health problem for everyone else.
It's a good thing that you phrase that as everybody who's thought about the vaccine issue. Because that eliminates Jenny McCarthy, who...
There are others, yes.
There are people who don't think about...
Rational human beings, and it certainly...
It doesn't mean that they don't have opinions. They clearly do have opinions.
Right? They're just not well thought out, logical things.
No.
But, most of our politicians and most of us believe, yes, everyone should get vaccinated. But it doesn't mean that we want Washington to mandate every child has to be vaccinated or your mom goes to jail. There's a huge difference between should and must. And even if we say must, most of us agree that must is to be decided at the school level. So the school is free to say that if your child is going to attend this school, he must be vaccinated. So a school district can set a requirement or a mandate that your child doesn't attend school without vaccinations. But that's very different from the governor requiring every child to get a vaccination. That's very different from Barack Obama saying everybody must, and it becomes this massive federal program. And sometimes in our conversations, we're not as good at responding with clarity the difference between should and must. And the left media is not only not helpful, they are on purpose trying to trap us.
Well, and then we have our own politicians, Perry, who do attempt to put something like this into practice.
Right, the Gardasil thing, right.
Yes, and Gardasil and the HPV virus business in Texas nearly sank the man because Texans
and he
were
has
so
rightfully great. Changed his mind and rightfully apologized, and he will be apologizing until forever, I think.
Here was the other reason that he did that. He was in, had some ties to the companies making the vaccine, and so you have that bit of cronyism in there too. And conservatives can look at these things and say, it's not right for the government to be in bed with a pharmaceutical company enforcing this many people to take a vaccine. And it is consistent to say that we don't think that the federal government or the state government should be compelling people to do things, but that there is a very strong recommendation, and that at the place where these interactions take place, on the playground, in the schools, etc., that's where the decision ought to be made between the parents, the schools, and those placed at the lowest level. There's absolutely nothing inconsistent to say about that. And conservatives can make that very clear, but what we're getting into is the name-calling and the who's stupid and who's not and what, people having the right to do what they want with their children and then infecting other people's children. It's getting to be a mess. Being very clear on power, the power part of the issues, the compulsion part of the issues, is something conservatives should be able to argue against. But at the same time, as Em Zanotti said in her article at American Spectator, this is a bad conversation for politicians at the presidential race level to get into.
It's not it shouldn't be an issue at the presidential level. I mean, it's just silly.
Exactly. It's one of those things that, how does this impact national politics? Is there anyone threatening to push a national...
Do you believe women should be allowed to buy birth control pills?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I'm saying there's no direct correlation to anything on the national scale. There is no pushing Congress to have a nationally mandated vaccination thing. This is something that goes to states. This is something that goes to school districts, as we've said. So why exactly is this question being posed to the presidential candidates, and why are they answering it? Those are two things that are just craziness. And as Leslie said, it is the new, do you believe in women getting birth, being able to buy birth control. It's that same sort of trying, the left is trying to bait our candidates. And thus far, Chris Christie, Rand Paul both fell for the bait. I don't know about Chris Christie on landing on his feet. He seems to have trouble landing on his feet these days. And then Rand Paul took a picture of him getting a booster shot today. I don't know if that's a good response or not, but it was a response, and he did clarify what he said. Go ahead.
I want to bring this up from the chat room. Rat George Templeton says, "This shouldn't be an issue, but this is what the left does: find issues not of national importance, make them national stories, and disqualify people with it."
Key being Bingo. To disqualify people with it. Yes, that's what they're doing, because we must never forget that every single person in the media is wearing the jersey of the other team.
Absolutely. We need to remember that all day, every day.
Can we just not take bait? It drives me crazy.
Exactly. I mean, it's on every level. And if you think that it's not, you are incorrect. They are baiting us all the time with all of these issues. We talked about it last week with the trolling of Obama on the YouTube thing, on Anwar, on all these issues. If there's one thing that you can expect from the left, it's that they're going to put these bait issues out there.
Did anybody bother to ask Hillary or Elizabeth Warren what they thought about that?
Hillary actually put out a tweet in response saying the sky is blue, the something else, and vaccines are good, or something like that. She took the opportunity as was available to her to tweet out her support of vaccination. So
yeah, she's able to say, "I like science," and everybody's like, "Oh, see, Hillary is so presidential."
Yeah, but guys, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, we didn't know. We're on the laptop. We didn't know if it would work. Aren't they really shooting their stuff pretty early, though? I mean, is this... I mean... Yeah, I said that on purpose.
There's probably a prescription pill for that. But actually, this is the right time for them to be making those mistakes. It is absolutely the right time for them to be making those mistakes. Because this is the time they can learn and move past it.
Absolutely. And remember, that's another thing.
So wait a minute. It's premature and premature and entrapulation.
I apologize to everyone else.
I want you all to know I have some caffeine and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, God, this is going to be just a horrible night.
I was going to ask. It was either caffeine or alcohol. I had my suspicions.
You know, seriously, though, this is worthless. It's way too early in the cycle. It's not going to do anything.
Yes, and people need to remember that. We are in February of 2015, guys. Put on the seatbelts. We're not going anywhere. It is is February of 2015. Nobody is dead because of this. Chris Christie is not dead because of this. Rand Paul is not dead because of this. The Conservative Party is not dead. You can stop panicking. Hiding underneath your desks. There's no tucking cover. We're fine. It's February. Calm down.
I do think the good news is how quickly conservative bloggers and conservative social media jumped on pointing out that this is a trap and pointing out that this is a mistake and pointing out the proper way to look at things so that we can all learn from it rather than letting it escalate and spin up. The fact that many of us responded so quickly and publicly to the trap that this is shows that we're learning and we're willing to share those lessons out quickly.
Well, a quick question. Do you guys think that with the left-wing media trying to make such a big deal out of this, that's yet one more thing that just makes them look worthless to the public? I mean, it just seems like if I'm John Q. Public, remember, I was raised a liberal. But even as a liberal, if I hear the media trying to make a huge deal out of something like this, and they keep doing it about every little thing that comes along when you're a year and a half out from an election, man, I've tuned them out by now.
I don't know. I'm wary about this because, as we said before, this is feeling a whole lot like War on Women 2.0. It's feeling a whole lot like they're trying to make this a thing, and they were successful with making War on Women a thing. They were successful in pushing that narrative and baiting some of our candidates. I will name names, Aiken and Murdoch, pox on both their houses, into having another moment like that. They're already pushing, and Fishy points out in our private chat here, that they're already pushing this anti-science narrative. So maybe anti-science is the new War on Women, because, you know, we have this thing about Ted Cruz always anti-science. Oh, Rand Paul, everybody's anti-science because they want to be a little bit more focused in their spending and maybe not do so many frivolous research projects on the internet habits of Tea Partiers, stuff like that. So I don't know. I would not be comfortable in saying that this is a non-issue and that it's making the average person not, you know, tune into the media. I think that it's very premature to say that. Possibly, who knows?
I don't know. I don't see this. I do think the anti-science thing could be used a lot more, but this is so small. I mean, come on. I just don't see where they can use this. It's so worthless.
I think the reaction is going to be not to turn off the media, but to turn off on all politicians and to think that all politicians are crazy and worthless and to walk away. And maybe that's also a goal of the left, because they don't really want an engaged populace. They want the right to get disgusted and tune out. And you know, what you see on any post that you put on social media about this vaccine issue, no matter what the initial topic of the post is, it degrades into a conversation that is the pros and the cons of vaccination, because that's what people want to talk about. That's what they feel informed enough to talk about. And it is a topic that people get passionate about.
Well, I was going to say, I think it's something that they want to fight about. Because I don't know about you, but this is one of the most frustrating topics that I've ever tried to study, and I've been trying for quite some time. You can't find any unbiased sources. It's either all vaccinations are horrible, evil, bad, you're going to die, you're going to give your kids autism, or if you don't do it, you put your public health risk, and your kids are going to infect everybody with deadly diseases, and you're going to be the next epidemic.
My vaccinations as a kid made me a Democrat. I have not recovered. It took me years to recover, okay?
And you're still not quite all there. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense now. It's all coming clear.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
About this? Please. I think everybody's sort of missing something why this could be a national issue is we've had over 100,000 kids come to our country in the past year, in the past 6 months. None of these kids have been vaccinated. And if you've noticed, all these kids have been sent around the country. We've even got measles cases in down in Fayetteville, near where I live. And we know for a fact that we've had some of those kids, illegal kids, been shipped to our state too. And I wonder why there's been such a big outbreak of stuff that the mumps, measles, forms of tuberculosis. This sounds to me like it's coming from an unvaccinated group of people.
Hey, Stephen, can I ask a question? Stephen, yeah. I know I keep calling you Stephen. I worked with a guy where it was spelled that way, and it was Stephen. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
But I'll call you Nancy.
Okay.
No, Stephen. Stephen it is. Look, I just want to ask, what do you think of this? I mean, we in America had so many of these things totally beat that maybe people were not getting the vaccinations very not seeing them as necessary. And then, as you say, we let all these kids come in across the border who have had no vaccinations, coming from nations where they were not beat, and now we have a problem. Could that have been part of it? Or
see, that's what I'm thinking. You know, the most illegals nationwide is in California, and this is where it's been cropping up the most. Another thing is, yeah, there's the anti-vaccination people, and then there's the vaccination people. And the way I feel about that is the same thing you were talking earlier, is if those people don't want to vaccinate their kids, fine. But their kids shouldn't be allowed to come to school. Because measles is, there's a 90% chance you can catch it from somebody else. It defeats the purpose if everybody doesn't get vaccinated. But the other thing being, you know, I haven't seen the anti-vaccination people. Some of it is just really heartbreaking. Some of these people believe it, you know, because they want to find something of why their kids have got autism or something like that. I've had a friend that her kid real bad autism. She's anti-vaccine. She completely believes it's the mercury content. But I don't. I think there's other stuff that probably would have made me sick just because they used to give us those type of, how would you say it? You know, when they drilled your teeth, I used to get the metal mercury type stuff put in my teeth. Yeah, I'm old.
I guess the point here, though, Stephanie,
could you get AM when that happened?
I could get shortwave. I got shortwave radio really well.
Okay. I don't want us to get off track here. I think the purpose here is to talk about how to talk about vaccines, not what the vaccines are doing or not doing. I'm not a scientist. None of us are scientists. We don't know. We're guessing. I put a link in the chat to a discussion on the Conservative Union that Leslie started about herd immunity, if people want to know more. But the important thing is to stay on track about how do we talk about it, and the issues of control by the government are ones that I think we can get people to resonate with, that the decisions ought to be made at the most local level is something we can resonate with and that people would agree with, and that the, you know, governor and the presidents shouldn't be involved in this kind of decision at all. And I think that's where I come down. I hope that's where everybody else is, you know, sort of leaning.
Well, yeah.
encouraging us to be always be clarifying, because it's too easy to get confused and to blur the line between should and must. People should get vaccinated. Should there be a law? Probably not.
Okay.
People should recycle. Should there be a law? No.
Okay, devil's advocate here. Because my preference is, yeah, I'll get the vaccines, but I prefer not to force parents to do what, you know, I don't want to tell parents how they got to raise their kids. But what about the fact that if they, you know, aren't we risking a spread? Because if you leave it up to localities, then in those ones that do and don't, it could spread from there to other ones. I mean, couldn't that endanger other locales?
Again, I don't really think that's something that any of us are really qualified to talk about. I mean, it's certainly an issue that should be discussed and debated, but I think that we can all agree that it's not something to discuss on the presidential level, on the national scale.
And the fact that Corey was talking about how the science is sort of divided and partisan on the issue, that's all advocacy all the time. There's not any, detached scientific writings on it that she can find. We can speculate what if all we want to, but we're not even going to get a source that people agree on.
Right. Isn't it an awesome topic to use for distraction and diversion?
And that is perfect.
That's what happened here.
Yes, yeah,
Stefan, that's what Fishy just said. We got completely distracted by the issue of vaccines when really all we needed to talk about was how we talk about it. We don't need to talk about the actual substantive issue of vaccinations because, again, none of us are scientists.
Yeah, I understand it, but what I'm saying is they've said that the Republicans are the kooks and that we're the issue, when, no, that's not true. Kennedy, who's a Democrat, you know, one of the that was just left office not too long ago, he wrote a book on it last summer, being anti-vax. So why are they calling it all Republicans?
Because
that's what they do. Because
that's how they work. And, well, then there's 2008 Hillary Clinton saying that this should be researched and studied. So yeah. I think we have to be quick to attack back, though, instead.
The thing is that we shouldn't attack back. We shouldn't attack. We shouldn't defend. We shouldn't do anything about it because it's not a national subject, and it's not going to be if we don't make it.
Well, I'm talking about on a local level. I'm talking about what a president – now, what a presidential candidate should say is, you know, except for Rand Paul, well, I'm not a doctor, so – I leave that as the state's issue. Let them decide what they want to do. You know, and
right.
If you're a Republican, that's what you would say. If you're a Democrat, say, well, we'll try to figure out a law for it, you know, for everybody nationally.
Templeton brings up something great in the chat again. It is talking more about the vaccines than ISIS beheading and then burning someone alive.
Yeah, I saw that video. Horrible.
Okay,
yeah.
So I don't want to, but we need to get back on priorities.
Yes, we need to talk about Jonathan Chait and political correctness. That's what we need to do. Oh, my goodness. All right, now that we're finally done with the vaccines, we need to talk about this because it's beautiful. There are a few things that I enjoy more than watching the left attack itself, and there are few times when we actually get to see it in progress. I always point out my favorite video ever of all on YouTube, that features this kind of lovely, when you get into political correctness, you have a radical feminist and a transsexual, and they're going at it fighting about, like, some stuff that nobody has any idea because it's all, like, funky and depending upon who your women's studies professor is and who your gender studies professor is. It's this is not something that's settled at all on the left. There are lots of fights and political correctness. It's beautiful because the left is attacking itself now. There is a great, really great. And this is coming from a leftist piece about political correctness and how it is, hampering the development of the left, how it's preventing people who would be their allies, preventing people who might become Democrat activists, be involved on the left, preventing them from joining because they can't get through a meeting without being chastised. It's amazing. Some of the examples that the guy gave were that, you know, he couldn't. There are black males who couldn't get through a meeting without being chastised about how they feel about homosexual marriage, discussions about also gender inequality, all sorts of things. And it is amazing because this guy, Jonathan Chait, got hammered immediately after writing this. The left just, you know, people from Salon, from Mother Jones, everybody just sort of said, there, get him. And they went after him. The zombie horde of the left, Tumblr, everybody is after this guy because
he's a white male and he used his white privilege to
absolutely
criticize. It was absolutely hilarious.
He dared to go there. He dared to say, okay, we might be going a little bit far with this political correctness stuff. And it's amazing. And I mean, the thing that would be just beautiful is if somebody on the left in the presidential election stepped out of line. I mean, if they started to violate their privilege, if they started talking about stuff, if they have an errant comment here or there, to see Tumblr, to see HuffPo, to see all of these guys on the left fringe media. And that's, you know, this is where it is. But that's what the left pays attention to, is the fringe media, the Salon.coms, the Mother Joneses, the Tumblrs. To see that, the pushback that would happen if Hillary Clinton were to pull something like this, it would just be amazing. It would be amazing to see what happened. Because this poor guy, this Jonathan Chait guy, who I'm sure we disagree with on 99% of the issues out there, he came out against political correctness and he got crucified.
Well, and here's what happened. Sean Davis wrote a response, and then Jonah Goldberg cited it in his piece that I linked in the chat. He says, I'm glad Chait has suddenly decided that speech policing is a terrible idea. He's only a couple hundred years behind the times, but better late than never, I suppose. Unfortunately, I don't think he's all that sincere about it. In fact, I think he just opposes speech codes when they're used against him or his fellow travelers. And I think that's right. I don't think that Chait, when he wrote what he wrote, actually went into, oh, hey, maybe we oughtn't to apply this the other way. Maybe we oughtn't to, go after people in general about political correctness. Maybe we should just reserve that for attacking the right. That seemed to be where that destination was headed with Chait himself. And so all sorts of people on the right have been enjoying some schadenfreude over that.
As well we should. We absolutely should. We should take a moment to point this out and point this out to as many Democrats as we can, and we should instigate. We should do exactly what they do. We should point it out, and we should have them fight, because you know what? That's what's important. It's so much better to have them, because I mean, we on the right fight for, you know, for nothing. We look at each other funny, and it's immediately, you're a rhino, no, you're a rhino, no, you're a rhino. We disagree on like the most minute policy thing, and it's war. But this is actual, I mean, hatred. This is visceral hatred that the left has for one another on these subjects. And it's just, it's amazing. And I hope that we capitalize on it. We need to be out there, and we need to, make sure that the left, pays attention to this as much as they are already. We need it to be a big thing. We need Melissa Hines Perry putting on some anti-Chait earrings. We need all sorts of stuff happening. We need Toure talking about this on whatever show it is that he's on now. I want to see Cenk Uygur invite on a ton of different professors and have this out, because it is beautiful and it hurts them, and this is demoralizing. This is when you don't want to work with your allies because of this stuff, and they are not allies. They are so completely opposed. If you're talking about the African-American community, if you're talking about the gay community, if you're talking about all of these different, the radical feminists, if you're talking about these groups, which we are, they do not naturally like each other. They absolutely do not naturally like each other. They are somehow put together because of the glue of liberalism and progressivism that helps pay for the stuff that they like. And they stick together when they have to. But when you see these cracks, when they start to show, they show big. And it is absolutely something that we need to push.
There were a couple of great quotes from Jonah's article, as is usual, because Jonah is just imminently quotable. And he said that pragmatic liberalism claims no ideological principles save the greater good. It has few defenses when its ideological principles are attacked, particularly from within. And that's why it's so powerful. They've been proclaiming that political correctness is some ideological principle, and it never was. And so now when it's being attacked from within by guys on their further left, the whole facade is crumbling. And another point he said, if good is simply defined by what liberal people at any given moment think good is, all questions become contests of power. And Jonathan Chait is used to being the powerful branch of liberalism, but he isn't anymore. The powerful branch of liberalism is now the LGBT community, the feminists, and the real radicals, and they're turning against him, and they're exercising their power over him, and he doesn't have any ideological ground to stand on, because leftism isn't an ideology. It is simply a power play, or is simply about control and power, and whoever has it wins.
Absolutely. And, you know, it kind of gets back to what we were talking about a few weeks ago. We were talking about Kurt Schlichter's I Am a Liberal and the chapter 3 of that book, which is awesome, talking about how they are an amorphous blob that doesn't really have any real principles, and that they don't have anything that even resembles remotely a cohesive argument. They just go for an amoeba attack on all sides to try and win. This is splitting up that blob. That's how we win. We split up that blob, and when they start attacking each other, it's like it is complete breakdown of the whole body.
And what happens when you have the juxtaposition of immigration, you know, illegal immigration, and labor, and people working and jobs in the economy? What happens when you have feminists versus the LGBT, the transgendered person who wanted to run for the head of a club or a organization at college and couldn't because she had transgendered into a man and therefore it was all crazy. When you set these constituencies against each other, when you find places to insert that little irritant, I think we can get a harvest of pearls out of it for ourselves when we can force that confrontation over something, magnify them when they happen, point them out, and where possible, you know, give them a little nudge. I think that being able to keep the coalition, the grievance union, at each other's throats gives us more room to maneuver and makes them look like they're perpetually outraged and ridiculous, which is the role they always try to cast us in.
And they are perpetually outraged. They absolutely are. I just can't wait to see see groups of you know, the LGBT community going into black neighborhoods and telling them to check their privilege. I mean, the amount of it's just amazing to me that concept.
And how can we get them to attack unions? Because the unions are a natural constituency for us, because we're about the middle class and supporting and protecting their jobs and employment and all of that. And most of the stuff that the left is actually doing hurts unions.
And that's exactly right. And we can do that. And it's the same thing with the African American community. We can talk about, hey, do you really want to be allowing so many illegal immigrants into the country when we have a dearth of entry-level jobs, when we have a dearth of good-paying middle-class jobs? Is that really what you want to do? Or do you really want to increase the labor pool? You're doing this, it hurts unions, it hurts everybody, because, I mean, the Party of Choice shared on their page today a story from California where a bookshop had to close down because of the minimum wage increases, which is yet another level that we can push in there, another nail in the left coffin. Fishy?
Can we go into minimum wage and have that at the same time as we're pushing for a very large influx of illegal immigrants, illegal immigrant workers? You can look at all these issues and go to a particular constituency and ask those questions. You know, how, is that really going to benefit you? Is that really something that you're going to support? Because here's what the consequences look like they're going to be. And that's a very, I think it's a very easy way to introduce that kind of needling, that nudging, that little bit of doubt in individuals that will hopefully spread when they begin to apply that and discuss that amongst their particular members of their particular grievance union.
I think, in my experience, though, that I agree with all of that, but in my experience, we're much more effective in doing that if we first come up from a position of not wanting to impose our beliefs on others. And here's what I mean. Let's say you're at work, okay, and you've got a series of liberals that represent different groups, And, you know, liberals are very quick to, you know, they all want to control everybody. And so they're what they want to control is pitted against one another very often. But they all work together. Why? Because they have a common enemy, us. And so you've always got, you know, two or three judgmental conservatives, maybe conservative Christians like me, who are, you know, who are dismissive and intolerant and attacking. Okay, now they've all got bad guys that they can all rally against, and that keeps them from turning against one another. What I always did was this. I always told them, oh, yeah, look, I'm a conservative right-wing evangelical Christian. Okay, but the first part of my belief system is this. I don't want my beliefs to be your laws. Okay, so right there I take that off the table. I say, yeah, I love sharing my view. I love sharing my beliefs, and I love hearing yours. But I don't want my beliefs to be your laws. I don't want to be your God. I'm not qualified. Okay.
I love now, that. Then, that's one of the party of choice nuggets that we don't often brush upon on the refinery. But that's one of the great ones right there.
Well, thanks. And the thing that sets up now is that now if I do everything you just described, now you can pit them against one another very easily because now you're not the enemy that they can all rally against, which keeps them all going in one direction, but you're the good guy who doesn't want to impose your beliefs on them as laws. And now it's very easy to look at them and say, really, you want to raise minimum wage? I mean, you've been here 6 months. That means the new people come in, and that means raises for you who earned it are going to take much longer to come. And when they come, they're going to be smaller because we're going to be spending more money, and they're probably going to have to cut back, so you're going to have to be running more. And you can start pitting their needs again. And like you were saying, are you sure? Really, you want a lot of illegals coming in? They're going to lower your wages because they're going to come in. They're not paying the same taxes you are. They're going to be working for a lot less. And if the bosses can get a lot of people for a lot less, they're not going to hire you, or they're not going to pay you what you're worth. And suddenly you can pit them against each other, but you can't do that if you come at them from a position first of wanting to impose your views as their laws.
Very well put, and that's something that we need to remember when we are trying to sabotage the left. And, you know, I have to say that this is not malicious. This is not like we don't like them as people or whatever, or the we don't care about gay people or transsexual people or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the left and their cults. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the grievance unions. We're not talking about individuals. We're talking about the collective anger and outrage over every little thing that happens. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about individuals. We're talking about the groupthink that the left has in these subgroups, in these subcategories. And that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about, we're not trying to be malicious over gay people or whatever. That's completely beside the point at all. I know a ton of awesome gay conservatives. I know a ton of just gay people that I have no problem with. There is a specific group that is extremely politically correct and has their, you know, it goes into the whole privilege checking thing. That's what we're talking about here. And that is a major, major, major part of the left where they raise their funds from. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, actually, if I may run with you there, the absolutely. The idea is not to use this as an attack strategy, but as a reveal strategy. And what I mean is, as I always say, there aren't too few of us, referring to conservatives, there aren't too few of us, there are too few who know they are us. And when you talk about that core of the left, that politically correct, judgmental, intolerant core of the left, they're very irritating. And if you aren't, then they can be seen. Okay? And so when you if you're coming at them and you're saying, look, you know, I don't want my views to be your laws, you know, I just want to be heard. Well, okay, well, that's fair enough. And then you show them well, do you really want this to be controlled in this way? Do you want to be controlled in that way? Do you want to be controlled? Do you want this done to you? Suddenly, the conservatism in them that they didn't know was there comes out. And a great example would be I saw a lot of times with gay people who, on average, make a lot more money. And you talk taxes. And before you know it, they really don't like paying higher taxes so somebody else can sit around. They don't like it. They don't like it, and they'll use the words, you know, I try to be nice, but they'll use the words parasite and this kind of stuff because they don't care. You know,
well,
once
that's,
again,
that's one of those benefits, fringe benefits of being a member, a card-carrying member of the left, is you get to say things that might make you look racist or whatever. Going back to the whole topic of political correctness, that's one of those things. If you're a leftist, you get away with this stuff.
Well, especially if you're gay, and they know that and they enjoy it. I mean, I don't say it in a bad way. I enjoy that. The bottom line is, if you're the good guy, then it's easy to, number one, show that core of intolerant, politically correct leftists are the bad guys. But number two, it's easy to bring out the conservative that is in so many of them.
Absolutely. We just need to practice it, and we just need to remember those strategies when we encounter those situations where we can employ them. And we need to remember that it's not always about attacking, and we have to push our agenda every single second. We need to be able to listen. We need to be able to engage in conversation. It cannot just be attack, 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 attack. It's not helpful. We don't have that kind of gunpowder. We are not able to get away with that.
Well, and before you go on, I just wanted to mention this. I think that we have had this issue today in the Conservative Union, that sometimes advocacy doesn't look like advocacy. It looks like something else. But we have people who are conditioned to think that if you're not yelling, if you're not starting with your debating points and everything, that you're not fighting. And that is absolutely not true. There are different methodologies and different ways to reach people. And we need to be open to more than just the yelling, more than just starting with our talking points, more than just our way is the best and here's why. We need to explore those conversations with people, lead them through conversations, ask them questions. And sometimes that doesn't look like fighting to some people on our side. And I just like to say to those people, I'd like them to rethink that. We can have some subversive actions going on that don't necessarily look like what you would expect a banner waving, flag carrying, you know, red, white, and blue person on the conservative side to start with. But Andy has got giving some really subversive, good, solid subversive tactics that could also be used, subversive techniques that should also be employed, and they are also fighting.
We need
well,
to be fighting
this
on all
this,
fronts.
Yeah, if you think of this as a war, you're not in battle all the time, and even if you're in battle, you're not always shooting, you're not always throwing a bomb, you're not always blowing something up. You have spies who are infiltrating, you have generals who are planning strategies. I mean, there are so many different aspects to winning a war. And this is a long war for the soul of America. And we have to be able to have people who play every part and have, you know, run every position, or now I'm going into sports, and that's really an arena I don't know anything about. So sorry, no sportsing. But
at least
have
you
to
got
have
the arena part right. Generally, sports are played in arenas.
Are they really? Oh, okay, well, that's cool. So like coliseums and I'm learning. There was a sports thing that happened this weekend, right? Okay, never mind. Don't want to get distracted about that. Okay, how did that happen? There's something weird going on technically that is not me doing that, so I don't know what's going on. Anyway, we do have to have people that have every position in the military. We have to have enlisted men. We have to have officers. We have to have support staff. We have to have all of that, and we have to be doing all of those activities. So, no, we're not always going to be throwing a bomb about a particular issue. We're going to sometimes be doing different things, but we're still making the advances. We're still fighting the battles. We're still working towards winning the war. And yeah, it's advocacy doesn't always look like advocacy, and people just need to be a little more patient in their impatience.
I just want to say before we move on from the topic, I just want to say, T, thank you. I really appreciate it, and very good job. Just want to give you a little golf clap. She knows what she did.
Yes, very much so. Agreed. I read it.
One quick thing.
Sure thing.
This is politics, not war. And it is war. I understand the battle that's going on. I talk about it being war all the time. We need converts. There are no converts in war.
That's true. But it's a useful analogy for, you know, cooks and soldiers and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
No. The war analogy is great. I totally agree with the war analogy. I'm simply saying, I think I'm agreeing with Leslie. I think at times we forget it's more than that.
And the reason that we see people talking in terms of war, I've done it myself in speeches that I've made in front of, you know, rallies and whatever. The reason people do that is because they feel attacked by the government, the left. You know, they feel as though they're put on the defensive. And so they believe that we should be fighting with every bit of ammunition, always pointing guns and always firing, regardless of the position. It's easy to understand with backs against the wall and you think that you're surrounded, when you feel surrounded, to get into to think of it as a war, and that you are out to defeat everyone on the other side. That is not your team. But you're right. Converts are hugely important, and we can't overlook that. We can't start with only the people that agree with us and end with only the people that agree with us. You've said it again and again, Andy. Mathematically, it doesn't work.
Well, and I think it's important that we remember everybody is wired differently. So if you are a really fiery personality and that fits you, by all means, go for it. But for others of us who are not wired that way, we don't want to be in constant outrage. And we can reach people that you can't. So let's remember that, and let's practice a little bit of acceptance on our own side, and just realize that we all have different styles of sharing our beliefs, too.
Absolutely. And while we're on the topic here of simultaneously trying to have the left attack itself and trying on our side to grow our party, I think something that we should talk about, and something that we should continue to talk about going forward, something that actually is something of real importance in the 2016 election when it comes to local races, when it comes to just sort of growing the party. We have been absent in a lot of ways in a lot of communities. One of those areas that we haven't quite made as big a push in as we should are urban communities, and there are so many issues that we can talk about that are really conservative issues that we can get some real headway on. One of those issues, and something that has been talked about a lot, school choice, and there's a reason why. Fishy shared this in the show prep thread, and it's an article that features a video from Reason, and Reason is not the only guys who have been doing this. We've also seen videos from Rebel Pundit and from Freedom Works. They have an empowerment, not entitlement, I think is what the Freedom Works project is, that talks specifically about urban issues. But this video that Reason put out was specifically about why government money can't fix poverty. And one of the big issues that they talk about is the immense spending. And this happens a lot here in New Jersey, and I know firsthand from this. I know teachers who have had classrooms where the students, you know, per student, the classroom is supposed to get in the, you know, 20,000 per student, $20,000 per student, and upwards, you know, past that in Camden and in Newark. And it is insane that we're spending that kind of money and we're still having failing, we're still failing these kids. This is one of those subjects, talking about school choice, talking about these things, that broadens the party and something that we can go into urban areas and say, hey, you know what, we actually do care despite what the left says. And hey, they want to have, you know, they want to take away more of your jobs. We want to bring education. We want to bring money for you to put your kids in the best school. That's what we want to do. We want to have the money follow the kid. That's the stuff that we want to get done. These are issues that we can use, and a sort of, we are paying attention to it. I think that is a huge thing to point out and a huge thing that we all need to educate ourselves about. We are seeing more and more of these documentaries like this Reason one, Why Government Money Can't Fix Poverty.
You know, from my experience with working in inner city schools with high-risk youth, there's usually two different groups. You've got the generational poverty, who they don't care about education. They are living in the moment. They value entertainment. They're not thinking long-term. And then you've got those who are on welfare, but they're newer to it. It's not a generational cycle. And I think that that message that you just shared would resonate very well with that population, because they don't want to stay there. They want to get out of those neighborhoods. So I think that if we, as we're going into these neighborhoods, I think it's important that we understand who our audience is and not get discouraged if we can't always reach the people that we're trying to reach with this wonderful message. Because I don't have the answers on how to break through to the generational poverty crowd. I worked down there for 6 years, and it's something else. But there are a lot of people down there, and there are a lot of young people, children, who don't like being afraid walking to school, who don't like it that their mom and dad don't have jobs and that they don't have enough to eat for breakfast or lunch or dinner. And the best meal they get is, you know, the Michelle Obama fare at lunch. So just keeping that in mind.
It's more like unfair.
Yeah, unfair is right. So it's just something that I really feel strongly about, because I saw it, like I said, for 6 years, and there is a way to break through it. I don't have all the answers, but we have to try.
Can I ask a question of my wife, but have everybody else hear it? not the usual begging. No, this is just a question. Would it be a good, first of all, I kind of like Bobby Jindal's way of looking at it. We want the we don't want the kids to have to follow the money. We want the money to follow the kids. Let's empower the families. And that's a simple concept that people can understand. But what's that? Okay. I can't read it, JD.
You have to hold it still so that we can see it.
It's a backpack. That's what they're calling this now. Is if the money follows the kid, it's a backpack. What is it? Fishy, help
backpack
me on this.
Backpack funding.
Backpack funding. Yes.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, I like that term. Yeah, it's a great term.
Here's the question for my wife. Since we can only reach, let's say we can only reach 20% out of the 100% that are in this school, would that be beneficial, though, in that that 20%, if reached, could then reach some of the other 80%?
Yeah, definitely. It's just you have to, like I said, you have to realize who your audience is, and you have to make sure that you're going towards an audience that is receptive, because there is a certain segment of the population in those situations who will not listen. They don't care.
And it's a shame, and it's something, I think, you know, while there is that segment that just doesn't care regardless, I also think that there's a massive amount of people that we haven't talked to. That we haven't reached out to, that we haven't done anything to even say, hey, we exist and we have these ideas, so maybe you should check them out, and maybe we can talk and hear what your concerns are, hear what your goals are, and figure out something together. I mean, another issue, and I just briefly want to talk about this before we get into the left tactics segment, is that Generation Opportunity, GenOp, is doing a big push on mandatory minimum sentencing this year. That's something I already got an email. I've been seeing a bunch of articles pop up about this. I shared one to my Young Republicans group that I'm in. This is a subject that I think that we need to pay a lot of attention to, and something that a huge conservative group like Generation Opportunity is making a push on. We can talk about situations where people are going to jail for 55 years for selling pot. I mean, these are issues that actually impact people's lives and hurt families, and I mean, it's a contributing factor to a lot of bad stuff, and we should be able to take a look at these mandatory minimum sentencing laws and agree that 55 years seems like a lot for somebody who didn't kill anybody, for somebody who didn't, you know, commit a heinous crime, for something that was a nonviolent offense. These are things that we can use to really propel ourselves, and rightfully we should, because these are important issues to all Americans, because, I mean, we don't want to be jailing people for stuff that it shouldn't deserve 55 years.
No, I think this is an example of where Rand Paul is a very compelling possibility to be on our ticket, or at least to be leading the way. Look, we've got it because here is an issue where we can make some headway and win some people. You know, 55 years for selling pot, that's incredible. Unless, you know, he sold really poor quality and maybe they were upset about it. You know, maybe this is maybe a complaint was filed. But first of all, that one's gonna work itself out, because pot's gonna be legal everywhere in the next few years. But why not, before that happens, take advantage of it politically?
So, absolutely, and it's not just. And this is another thing: it's not just pot, and that's something that needs to be said. Something that I pointed out, one of the cases that I pointed out was the Shanine Allen case that happened here in New Jersey. Thankfully, she was able to get a pretrial intervention to alleviate her situation. But she was facing a mandatory minimum sentence of 3 years because how insane it is. She lives in Philadelphia. She got a concealed carry permit. She has her gun to protect herself because of the neighborhood she's in. She made a trip across the state lines into New Jersey, and she got pulled over by a police officer, and silly her, she told the cop that she had a gun and she had a permit for it, which is illegal. It doesn't carry over from from Pennsylvania to New Jersey. And she was facing 3 years in jail.
JDR, isn't Boehner and Company advancing something to change that, to where you can carry across state lines and not face that kind of penalty?
There's a push for some reciprocity, recognition of gun licenses, just like we recognize driver's licenses and marriage licenses across states. And, you know, don't get me started on the marriage license thing. You know, but there's some universal recognition of some laws. But the mandatory minimum issue is one that we see it in education, where kids get thrown into detention for some minor infraction because, oh, well, we've got mandatory minimum sentencing for kids and we've got mandatory minimum sentencing for criminals. And it's taking the decision away from the local people who are best able to understand the real depths of the situation and to apply the most appropriate punishment for the crime. And those are things that conservatives and libertarians and liberals really should be able to partner on. And that, again, can be some of that, I don't like politics and I don't like politicians, but I'm going to get involved in a cause. These are the causes that can really change the world. And as we frequently talk, politics is downstream from culture. These things are cultural changes. If we can change the culture on terms of mandatory minimum sentencing and some of our criminal litigation stuff that we've got going on, and there are some really effective organizations working on it. If we can do that, those are the kinds of cultural shifts that can help politics reflect the changes that we can make happen through being active in causes for people who don't like being active in electoral politics.
Well, and I think that's a topic that really does resonate with those who are not political as well as those who are not conservative. This right. last summer, I saw a show, I think it was 60 Minutes, they did something on mandatory minimums, and they were talking about all the problems that are caused with them, like things that you brought up, JD. And one of the reasons that they're so popular is because district attorneys who are elected and judges who are elected can point back and say, look at all these criminals that we put behind bars. We're tough on crime. But since the public doesn't understand the mandatory minimums and they don't understand what these quote-unquote crimes are, it's an educational gap. So we need to make sure that people are understanding what's truly going on.
Well, and that went crazy with my mute button. That's where the organization Right on Crime can be helpful in touting what Texas has done, because Texas is supposed to be, you know, we execute more people for crime. We're tough on crime. We have DAs that want to, you know, claim that they've arrested and thrown more bad people in jail, et cetera. But over the last so many years, Texas has made some changes in the sentencing and the incarceration rates from a saving money perspective, because we're spending a lot less money incarcerating people who don't need to be incarcerated. And there's the compassion angle and the reducing recidivism rates if you can treat them right. So I think there's some good ways that the things Texas has accomplished can help people in other states get past that whole, I'm the DA and I want to be tough on crime, so I insist on mandatory minimums. So I think there's a way for people to really push past some of those issues by using some of the successes that we've seen in Texas. At least that's what I'm hearing.
Real quick here, for one quick point. Just to make, so we don't make super enemies out of DAs who have built their career on that, I would look at them and say, the DA's name is Bob. Oh, but Bob has done a great job within the system as it was. Okay, he was doing the right thing within the system as it was. We simply want to change the system, you know, for this way, for because of liberty and so forth, because it's too punitive for these minor infractions. I think it's kind of important to recognize the excellence of those who have done that in the process of changing the system.
I think that's a good point. I think that that's a good point to remember going forward, that yes, the laws are as they are, but we need to change them, and we should. And from there, I think we should probably head off to our last segment.
Right. So every week we've tried to put together an item, a left tactic that we can pick apart, talk a little bit about it, and come up with some solutions for how we on the right, how conservatives should respond to that. And Leslie hit upon a really good one that we all will recognize when she goes into it, but maybe haven't thought of as a tactic. Take it away, Leslie, because this is something that hit me anew between the eyes.
Yeah, and it just came up today. Saw the article about the lawsuits in Texas about our voter ID legislation. And, you know, my first instinct or my first thought was, this is still a deal? I thought we'd finished that. We did that. We won. We had voter ID. We've gone through a couple of elections where voters were required to show their ID, and everything went really well. It's been settled. It's gone up. I think it went up to the Department of Justice, and they tried a few things, and then I lost track because it was over. It was done. But no, it's not, because the leftist tactic that always bites us in the butt is that it's not over until they win. They don't stop fighting until they win, and they do this on every single issue. The thing on voter ID in Texas, they're still suing Texas, and Texas is still having to defend itself against this lawsuit about how our voter ID thing is racist, because they got one judge in one district down on the border to agree that the voter ID law was most likely racist. And the Department of Justice has done a complete rectal exam on all of the paperwork in the entire state looking for evidence of racist intent. They've hired people and gone through and interviewed people in homeless shelters all throughout the state, looking desperately, trying to find someone who was unable to vote because they didn't have an ID, because they are so desperate to overturn this law. They haven't succeeded in finding anyone, and they haven't succeeded in finding any documentary evidence. But Texas is still having to go through the expense of defending itself, and we still have to remain on guard. Even though we won this issue, we won, but it's not over for them until they win. And so what's really maddening is that we have to pay attention to an issue so closely and fight hard and fight hard and fight hard, and then, yay, we've won, celebrate, move on to the next thing. Well, while we are moving on to the next thing, they're hiring their lawyers and their lobbyists to get it overturned. And then because we're not paying attention, our legislators or our legal minds, they're exhausted as well, and we're no longer paying attention, so they're just going to quietly give in because that's the easiest thing for them to do. And that's how sometimes we lose battles that we won before. And we don't even notice it until all of a sudden we wake up one day and, why aren't you asking me for my ID when I vote? I thought we did that. Oh, no, that got overturned. What?
That's something that we just, for whatever reason, we say that we know, we say that we understand, but we just don't get the intrusive nature of liberal politics and policy and their strategy and tactics. They are naturally intrusive. They go over time. Slowly at first, and then eventually they hit their home runs, but they are all about attrition. They're all about doing things constantly to progress their agenda. That's just how they play.
And let's look at issues like voter ID that are still apparently not settled, even though there might have been victories. The abortion law in Texas, the legislation that was passed in 2013 session that made Wendy Davis' name in Texas, is still being debated, is still being litigated, is it not?
Sadly, yeah. I mean, how do we kill, I mean, do we need a silver bullet? Do we need a steak? Some garlic?
There's zombie issues that keep coming up again and again and again. They are the undead issues. And it immigration is going to be this way. We'll never settle immigration. It will never be an issue that has a complete and final disposition unless the left wins.
Science is settled on climate change.
One point I want to make is you guys are talking about legislation, things that are still in legislation, they're trying to pass it or overturn it. Once that fails, they don't give up. Once everything's gone through the legislation, it's gone to the Supreme Court, they'll find another way to attack it. They'll try to do it with small rules that they make or regulations that they pass or using the media in Hollywood to go about making it seem bad and changing people's opinion on it. Like we've talked so much, pop culture is upstream from politics. They'll go to pop culture to make it seem like a bad idea to get people on their side. They will change the language so that instead of talking about abortion or killing a fetus, it's now pro-choice. They'll do anything they can, and they will not ever stop until they get their way. It'll go from eugenics to Planned Parenthood. Go from creating the master race to we just want to help plan your family and be responsible. That's what they do, is they change the language and change the tactics until eventually it gets done.
And as far as the lawsuit end of it goes, it's important to us to win national elections for this reason. The executive branch that appoints all the federal judges needs to be the one in control. Conservatives need to be the ones in control of that process. You cannot tell me, you know, regardless of what, you know, some Supreme Court misjudgments some of our presidents on the right have made, you cannot tell me that, say, a Romney, I can say that because he's out now, that a Romney would appoint more, you know, liberal judges to the federal bench than, say, a Hillary Rodham Clinton. You cannot tell me that that is the case. And with those, every liberal federal judge that gets appointed is waiting for zombie cases to hit his desk and to hit his court and to be able to make law from the bench over these issues where they have been settled. We've seen it time and again. A legislature will act, a lawsuit will come up, a judge will overturn it, and the people's will is out the window. We have to get the judges. We have to get the executive branch in order to get the judges.
And just hope and pray that Ruth Bader Ginsburg clings to life with her claws and just stays in there, because and that's another amazing thing about the left. You can read a ton of blogs, you can read a ton of posts out there of people saying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg should just die already because they need to have a new justice in place before Obama's term is up. That's how they play. These guys are serious. They are playing hardball with the judicial system.
Isn't it incredible that she has not stepped down for this long? I've been shocked. I've been pleasantly surprised, but I've been shocked. You know, and here's the big thing. This is why we on the right are so quick to divide and attack each other, because we don't understand the absolute importance of winning the White House. Okay? How many people stayed home because they didn't like Romney? How many stayed home because they stayed home, and I see them on the Facebook pages and the blogs. They laugh about it. They celebrate the fact that they were able to bring them down. And then on the same pages and blogs, they complain about the judges and how the judges are passing laws when they stepped aside to allow it to happen. Meanwhile, and here's the whole thing. We on the right believe in competition. They on the left believe in control. There is no competition for the courts. So that's why they want to seize the courts so they can control. We don't see the value in that. We win an election or win an issue, and we think, well, we won the competition. For them, that's only the first step. Why? Because they don't believe in competition anyway. They only believe in control. That's why they go to the courts. And we lose that because this is why they unite to win the position that appoints the courts, and we do not.
Which is why we need to make it even more of a priority than it is right now to break up those chains of liberalism, of progressivism, make sure that they stay divided, because they are already naturally opposed. And we need to point that out. We need to point it out early. We need to point it out often, because if they get more seats in the judiciary, it is not good for us, and it is not good for freedom, and we have no recourse.
They'll continue to grow the bureaucracy, which is another control group that doesn't face any competition, because bureaucrats are unelected and they can never get fired, and they just sit back and they write rules and dictate what the rest of us can do, and they work for the executive branch.
I guess the point is, progressivism delenda est, Democrats delenda est. We have to get rid of this. We have to win in order for them to be out of power. And that involves some compromise on our side with each other. And that's the thing here. We're talking about not compromise with the left. We're talking about compromise with each other here on the right. And thankfully, I think we got a really strong team of guys for 2016. And you know, we are entering into that season where people pick sides, whatever. We need to remember that at the end of the day, we do have an enemy that is worth uniting against. We're all wearing
the same color jersey. We need to support one another.
Absolutely. Doesn't matter if it's my favorite player or your favorite player who has the ball. We need to all support that player.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I tell these people who are committed to division, and they say, you know, they're so quick to divide because they say, I'm doing it for principle. I look at them and I say, let me tell you something. I believe in the young people of this country, the children, the generations that are coming. We've already screwed them with $18 trillion and adding up in debt. But I will vote for somebody who is 1% better than Hillary Clinton, because that is 1% better for them, for the young people. I will not let my anger over not getting the candidate I want keep me from doing the best I can for those young people. Okay? Now, granted, I want a much better candidate than that, of course. I don't want the 1% better than Hillary, which is basically a houseplant. Okay? But I want something better than the houseplant. But I will vote for somebody 1% better than Hillary if that makes it 1% less damaging for 4 years to the next generation coming up. I won't let my emotions harm them. That's not right.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I have some serious principle issues with houseplant. Houseplant is extremely non-interventionist. Houseplant, he doesn't want to do anything about taxes. Houseplant has such a huge Houseplant, I'm sorry. Houseplant has this huge deal with solar energy. He is in solar energy's pocket. It is terrible. We should not support
Houseplant stays out of your life. Houseplant hasn't passed a bill in ages. Houseplant is perfect. Houseplant is the ideal congressman. I want you to know, if every congressman were a houseplant over the last 100 years, we would be living in paradise.
I'm telling you this right now, there's a lot of dirt on houseplant, so we can't support him.
You got it. You did it. Oh, there you go. That's it. I was going to say maybe we should go with Container Ficus. He can be inside, outside. He can be bi-residential, and then we're going to have the whole bi-lobby dealing with. That was just going to get ugly. I think the main point we have to get from all of this is that as conservatives, for the last 100 years, we've wanted to get involved in politics when an election is coming up. And then after the election, after we win that competition, we want to go back to our real lives, because politics has not been part of our real lives. And because we've only paid attention a few months out of the year, the liberals, who are always engaged, always involved, always fighting, and always working at it, they end up winning because we're not even awake. We're not even paying attention. We're not playing the game. We didn't even show up. We're not on the field, using that sports metaphor again. And we have to realize that that's why we've been losing, and that means we have to be engaged in politics 24/7. It doesn't mean that we have to focus on who the presidential candidate is in February of 2015. It means that in February of 2015, we should focus on the Congress that we just reelected, the senators that might be able to accomplish some stuff over the next couple of years, all of the great governors and state houses. We should focus on learning better how to deal with the press and the media, helping ourselves get better at understanding what's going on and spreading information, building our own networks up. We need to focus on getting involved in the causes that drive us and that we're passionate about. But we need to stay engaged and attentive and pay attention to this stuff. And we need to catch these stories about how Texas is still having to defend its voter ID law and make note of it and contact whoever you need to contact to make sure that our guys know that we still need to keep winning. Even though we already did win, we need to keep winning, we need to keep fighting, and we need to remain engaged in politics, because you just spent 3 hours paying attention to the Super Bowl. I didn't, and both of us have our lives affected exactly the same amount about the Super Bowl. But when you don't pay attention to politics, I can control your life. If I'm paying attention to politics and you're not, I'm in charge of you. So we need to be paying attention to politics a little bit more than we want to, And it's ugly and it sucks. But because our opponent is always on, I think we have to be always on too. Am I wrong?
If I could just add one thing, let's make sure it doesn't sound like just drudgery all the time. Folks, it's also a lot of fun. If you do stay involved, and if you do work together, and if you do keep your messaging fresh, you're going to have tons of victories. And all of this division that you cause amongst the left, it's going to be fun. It is so fun. I am still buzzing off of what happened in November. And we are going to crush them if we just keep it up. They get tired too. And it's really fun watching it happen. I really enjoy it. I believe all of them aged like 10 years on that November night. And it was fun to watch. Okay? So there's a lot of fun ahead, folks. There's a lot of fun ahead if we do this. Things are really lining up. But we got to stay together. And we've got to work together. Because it's going to pay off.
All right, and those comments from Andy are why we keep him around. He brings us all back into the joy of doing this and why we show up here every week, every Tuesday night at 8:45 Central. TheRefineryShow.com, you can watch us live Tuesday nights at 8:45, chat with us live. We had a good number of people chatting today. And then if you don't get to catch us live, like some of our folks can't because of, work or family or whatever, you can watch it after hours on YouTube or on any of our podcast channels. All of that information is available at therefineryshow.com. This is also broadcast on vigilantlibertyradio.us. Thursday nights. Fishy, give us the deets on that.
Yes, we are also getting a nice little audience out of Vigilant Liberty Radio, our newest partners. They have been so generous. They've been airing our spots, our promo spots as well during other shows, and we wanted to thank them for that so much. Those guys have been a good support, and we're so pleased to be a part of that family. I wanted to mention, too, wasn't it interesting that not Larry O'Connor was in our chat this evening? That is very interesting.
Super cool that not Larry O'Connor was there. I'm not sure who that could possibly be, but, interesting.
Well, it wasn't Larry O'Connor.
No, but there was a definite code word there that might have given some clues. So people who are wondering what goes on in chat, you need to be there. You never know who might or might not show up.
Exactly. And we have a good bunch of folks from the Conservative Union, as well as from Free Radical Network, and some of those folks we might have on the show at some point in the future. No reason not to.
And we can't really, we must mention that the Party of Choice, we have to pimp them out too. They will be hosting terrestrial radio. They'll be on Grassroots Radio Colorado hosting both hours this Thursday. It's going to be awesome. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern time, I believe, and it is. I mean, that's awesome that we've got a real terrestrial presence for the Party of Choice. It's pretty epic.
And that's going to bring us to the end of the show for today. We ran over. We started late. We ran late. And, well, that's just the way things happen. It's nice that we don't have producers and stuff that are giving us hard breaks like they do on terrestrial radio. So thank you guys for being here. And we will see everybody next Tuesday at 8:45 Central.